At the beginning of every podcast, I set a metronome at 84 beats per minute, and it helps set the pacing for each one of my shows. It just helps me get in a rhythm. If I have the metronome too fast, I feel rushed, too slow, I want to drag, and this just helps me hit my rhythm of what I want to do. Every human being is born with a rhythm, whether it's our heartbeat in our chest that's just going ba-dump, 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 ba-dump. Whatever it might be, it seems like we have this innate sense inside ourselves for what a beat is and rhythm. We are musical beings at our core. And I often wonder, let's go back to 1973, back into the Bronx of New York City. Today we're going to have a little bit of a history lesson, and we're going to talk about hip-hop. That's right, maybe my listeners are not too aware of hip-hop culture, but we're going to start today, and I have a great guest today to talk about some of the pioneer voices that helped really take on the government in First Amendment rights, as well as hip-hop culture bringing people together. And how is a young person supposed to continue on in hip-hop culture now that the industry has changed and the times have changed? We're going to explore that today on America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Growing up in the 80s with an older brother, I was introduced to punk rock, rap, and hip-hop at an early age. There were many albums that my parents didn't want me to listen to, but because I had an older brother, they found their way into the collection. Albums by Public Enemy, NWA, 2 Live Crew, and of course there was the safer LL Cool J, DJ Jazzy Jeff and the Fresh Prince, Onyx, and the list goes on and on. But where did this music get its roots? Where did hip-hop culture start? Well, you got to go all the way back. I'm going to give you a history lesson before I bring on my guest a little bit so you have a jump-off starting point. You got to go back to the early 1970s in the Bronx in New York City. And there was a man by the name of DJ Kool Herc. Now, DJ Kool Herc took the sound of places like Studio 54, where they would play disco records. But he noticed something. He noticed that when the lyrics stopped and you're observing the dance floor, that's when people really started to move. That's when they really started to groove and dance. And he invented a technique where, just as those DJs at Studio 54 would have two albums on the turntable, so one on either side, and then they would just go from one song to the next, DJ Kool Herc decided, well, what if I do this thing called breaking? And in breaking, he would just keep the beat going from one album to the next. It was called the merry-go-round technique. And people could not get enough of this. So in 1973, when the switch got turned on and DJ Herc was doing his business, he realized the dance floor all of a sudden came alive. And the people that were doing the dancing to the breaking that he was doing is where we get B-girls and B-boys. It's the break dance, which goes directly to that cutting between two albums, keeping the beat going. That was called breaking. And so we had the DJs doing their thing of handling the beats and the music, and there was an art to being able to scratch the records, change the records, mix the records, figure out which song was going on to the next. This is long before computers being able to do all this. It was all by ear. And then we had breaking, we had the B-girls, the B-boys, and then we had MCing, rapping, putting the spoken word poetry to a beat. And that started inspiring what we now know as rap music. But hip-hop culture had to take flight first within all of that. And so you've probably heard the names, or hopefully have heard the names, like Coke LaRock. Now, Coke LaRock was in the room with DJ Kool Herc when he started doing the breaking. And so Coke LaRock is credited as being the first MC in the history of hip-hop. Now, hip-hop culture also breaks out into a couple other areas. One of those main areas is in art, which some people would call graffiti, but others would call it writing. It was the painting of highly stylized graffiti. And I have a guest that's going to be on the show in the future here that does this style of art and has preserved hip-hop culture, and I cannot wait to bring him to you. You may have heard of the musical Hamilton, and that's a good matchup of where theater and literature combine hip-hop elements and themes and drama, poetry, and stories. And then finally, one of the most important parts, and one of the reasons I brought my guest on today, is this knowledge of self. See, hip-hop culture had a moral, social, and spiritual principle that helped to inform and inspire the hip-hop ways of being. It was the sound of KRS-One talking about things that were bigger than just himself. And it was the pioneers of rap throughout the years like Chuck D or Ice-T talking about First Amendment rights and talking about the government in people's lives and talking about your liberty. See, a lot of people don't know that hip-hop culture had a message of personal liberty at the core. It was concerned about a culture of liberty, a culture of bringing people together. At one point, a culture of stop the violence. And hip-hop did it in such a profound way that one can even make an argument, we may make the argument today, that it should be taught in every single classroom. And my guest today is none other than the legendary Chuck Creekmore. Now, Chuck Creekmore is the co-founder and co-CEO of AllHipHop.com, which was co-founded in 1998. It's basically the CNN of hip-hop, all right? This is where everybody goes to get their information. And there's few people quite as thoughtful and as gifted that I've met in my life as Chuck Creekmore. He's been a freelance journalist. You've probably seen him on the television. It could have been on anything, really. I mean, from USA Today, The New York Times, The O'Reilly Factor, VH1, BET, NPR, The Source Complex, Hot 97 FM, you name it, and Chuck Creekmore has been involved in it. And he's here today with America Emboldened. Now, when I was growing up, Chuck, with music and hip hop and everything, it was fun. It was artistic. There was cool sounds coming out almost every album. You never knew what you were going to get. And music had a message. And then somewhere around like the mid 90s, all of a sudden you got like Puff Daddy and all these other people up there. And it all seems to be about money. And it felt like to me that hip hop culture lost its way. Now my students say, Mr. Bolden, you got to listen to Lil Durk. You got to listen to all these different artists. And I listen to them. They all sound the same, which leads me to start off today's conversation with, has hip hop culture lost its way?
No, it's definitely, hip hop is bigger than ever. Even as a culture, it's bigger than ever. Rap music is the dominant genre of music. Despite what it may feel like, it's still very experimental at times. It's such a thriving culture. But the problem is, and this is what you mentioned briefly, it's not that it lost its way, but money came into play, and that money is not something that the young people have or the kids in the hood have. It's the corporations that have the money. And, you know, if you dangle money in front of someone that needs money or wants money or fame and other things that are considered currency, then they're going to do whatever they need to do to get it. And also, I think that there's a narrative that's not, it's never spoken, but I think that a lot of people, some people will take exception to this, but I think that the narratives are shaped by people who are not from the culture. So, for example, Public Enemy, if you want to, you know, use them as a good example, or KRS-One, there's a number of them. But if you want to just use Public Enemy, because they were such a radical pro-Black and, you know, nationalist stance and, you know, all these things, you know, who... There's definitely a contingency in corporate that doesn't want that to thrive and become the dominant version of hip hop.
Oh, that is a bit provocative there. I like that. We're going to get into that in a moment. But for my listeners, I'm curious, you know, let's back up just a little bit. Can you give your definition of what is hip hop culture?
Hip hop culture is a bunch of things at this point, but the core elements are DJing, rapping, b-boying, b-girling, breakdancing, whatever you want to call it, graffiti. And then there's another component, which is generally called knowledge of self or knowledge. And after that, you know, we've got other things like fashion. I would consider technology one, you know, because hip hop's always employed technology to advance the culture, sampling, you know, things like that. The internet now, I mean, early adoption is exactly what hip hop does. So you have to expand the culture a little bit past the first four elements, but those were the core elements. And, you know, people might think that graffiti isn't a thing, but it is. And it's huge all over the world. If you go to Greece, and I don't mean the kind that's being monetized like Banksy or something like that. I'm talking about people expressing themselves, you know, visually. B-boying, breakdancing is huge. Red Bull, I mean, it's like the cornerstone of a lot of Red Bull's initiatives right now. They have competitions all over the world. Obviously rapping and then DJing. DJing is so crazy now that Paris Hilton's a DJ, you know, like, you know, like everybody's a DJ now. So DJing, but the way, you know, people like Grandmaster Flash introduced it and blending and mixing and rocking a party, those things are commonplace now. And, you know, I would venture to say that a lot of people that are Black or brown or impoverished or whatever aspire to just rap because that is the way to be famous. That's the way to be rich and all those other things.
So when do you think that the hip hop culture changed commercially, that people would be chasing making money? When did that happen?
Well, it's funny. I was talking to somebody about this the other day, and I don't want to place blame or anything like that. But I think that the Diddy era really signified a considerable change in the culture. And that's because, it reflected, you know, he was bouncing off the West Coast, but I think that the sampling became a little more basic. And it wasn't about chopping up or discovering old records or things like that. It became about being familiar and being a package deal, you know, a product, you know, more. It was a product before. It's always been a product, but it felt more like a product. And I think artistically, hip hop used to be noisy. It used to be annoying to people. It used to be aggressive and things like that. But I think that once that kind of was the shift, it became less, I'm not trying to blame Diddy for this, but it became a little bit less respectable. I used to see people like Sting or David Bowie, like just diss rap, like really bad. And I hated that because I liked those guys and I didn't like to hear them talk bad about it. But at the same time, I understood as artists where they were coming from.
You know, I grew up listening to the Beastie Boys, and back when Rick Rubin was producing them, it was all about coming up with new sounds and trying to make things as original as possible. When I listen to the music now, it sounds like everybody's producing the exact same drum beat sound, the trap beat. It sounds like everybody's doing the exact same thing. There seems to be no originality. And I'm asking myself, is this because I'm 43? Am I just an old man now?
Yeah, you're definitely an old man. But, you know, the laws changed, man. When Biz Markie got sued for that sample, and De La Soul's album is still not on Spotify to this day, 6 Feet High and Rising. I mean, these are things that change the culture. And so hip hop is from a place where people couldn't afford instruments or didn't know how to play them. And they revitalized a lot of people's careers, but they were creative about it. And so once these laws or the corporate hooks or whatever, I mean, even just paying the artists what they're due to because you've sampled it, that's fair. But it really produced a complication in the creative space. And then on the flip side, I think it just became cheaper and cheaper for the companies to create music. Like, we don't even see hip hop groups anymore. So we're like, why would you deal with a band or a group or even a really expensive producer when you can get a kid who can get on Fruity Loops or whatever is going on right now and do it right in their house? and produce a hit like Lil Nas X or something, you know, which was a sample, by the way, but still.
Yep.
My students will be in the classroom and they'll be making beats as I teach audio, radio, video for the listeners that don't know. Chuck knows that. He met me actually at the high school. And as they're creating all these beats, they all sound the same. And I say to them, like, guys, where's your originality? Where's your sound? They're like, well, Bolton, this is the hot sound right now. And I always say everything sounds so cookie cutter. You know, was hip hop okay with cookie cutter?
No, it was never, not for our era. No, it was never cool to be cookie cutter. But there were copycats, you know, there were copycats every step of the way. When people, you know, if you listen to early Run DMC, it sounds a lot like Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. So I'm not saying they were copying per se, but you could hear the influence. You can hear Public Enemy and the Bomb Squad's influence on early NWA and stuff like that. So I just think that kids are less prone. They don't have the time to cook in the basement and just figure it out and slowly, you know, everything is instant. You know, you can jump on the internet. You don't have to even go through a label. And it's funny, I was listening to Kool G Rap talk today, and he was just talking about, you know, the creation process in general and how you were one in a million. When you got signed, you were like drafted to the NBA, like you were special. You were the next star, you know what I mean? And it's hard now. Kids don't have, we had a nonconformist mentality, I think. The older people had a nonconformist mentality, and now it's very much about conformity and fitting in. Oh, you're weird. No, I mean, for me, weird was good. The Beastie Boys were incredible. You know, as a group, as in, you know, like artistically, they were remarkable, you know, and so were so many others. But I appreciate them because they were musicians as well, you know, but they took risks, man. I mean, you know, for me, and like Kendrick Lamar is a great example of someone right now in the present day who doesn't have a problem taking risks, having an incredibly dense body of work with topic matter and extreme thoughtfulness in his artistry. But he's, you know, he's super smart. He's super risk, you know, what's the word? You know, he'll just take risks. And most people are scared to take risks. You know, they're scared to stand out. They're scared to be weird. They're scared of looking like a punk or whatever the, you know, whatever the case may be.
I want to kind of circle back something earlier in the conversation. So in hip hop, anytime an MC cracked open a microphone, there was always homage paid to somebody else. But there's a saying, when you steal from somebody else, it was called biting, right? And biting was a sin. Is biting still a sin here in 2022?
No, biting is pretty common now. I think every now and then somebody will call somebody out, but it's pretty much normal now. Yeah, I mean, again, you know, the world is different also. Drake is from Canada. He got down with some guys from down south, and his sound is not Canadian. I mean, I think it's I don't know what it is now, but, you know, when you hear Canadian, you don't think that's his sound. It's just sounds. And I was actually talking to Queen Latifah recently, and I asked her what she thought of the culture, and she was happy about it because she felt like there was this homogenization that has occurred in hip hop where people can collaborate, people can work together. But I think, you know, from different regions, you know, West Coast, East Coast, Africa, you know, Canada, and it's all good. I do appreciate the old days where NWA would say, we're from Compton and this is what Compton is like. And you knew it was so visual, and you didn't even have to go to Compton to know what it was like. And for me, moving to New York from Delaware was an easy transition because I knew exactly what I was going to experience in Brooklyn before I got there, because that's just how the visuals work in hip hop, even though it was audio. So I think that biting has always been there. But again, it goes back to the companies. Who's going to take a risk when you have a P&L sheet or you have you know, you have to hit a certain financial goal by the end of the year. You know, who wants to take those risks? You know, because hip hop's not brand new anymore. So they have the formulas down. You know, if you listen to early hip hop, I was trying to listen to some stuff a few days ago. And I mean, it was almost unlistenable. I'm not going to lie. Like early 80s, it was horrible. Like it was really bad, really unlistenable music. But now, you know, we're talking 40 years later or whatever. They've got it down. You know, but that's the beauty of Spotify. There's two sides to it. But if you work hard and if you look at it like digging in the crates, you can find a lot of creativity, a lot of fresh sounds, a lot of kids with lyrics, a lot of kids with beats. And the sampling has relaxed a little bit. It's too expensive to go chasing down every single rapper now. So they're sampling again.
Chuck, I do want to spend some time maybe getting to know some of the up-and-coming names, maybe if you've dug deep into the Spotify records, some of those names that you want to talk about. But before we can get into that, I want to talk after the break about the pioneers of rap music. You talk about how the labels have figured out what makes them money. Back in the late 80s, early 90s, there was a lot of controversy. It went to Congress, Two Live Crew, getting the sticker parental advisory put on their albums. Store owners getting arrested simply for selling what they deemed as explicit content. And I want to know more about those pioneer voices and where are they now, if the industry would be in a better place. And so in just a few moments, everybody, you're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network with our special guest today, Chuck Creekmore. We'll be right back in just a few moments.
All right, you've all heard Malcolm and the great Dr. Peter McCullough talk about the povidone iodine-based nasal spray Cofix RX. They talk about it because it's a product that actually works in combating colds, flus, and coronaviruses. Cofix is made in the USA and recommended by thousands of doctors and pharmacists nationwide. It's simple. By attacking viruses where they incubate, you make it easier for your body to heal. Check out the Cofix RX banner ad on AmericaOutLoud.com and save 20%. By using promo code OUTLOUD.
Trouble getting to sleep and staying asleep can be infuriating. Your mind races. You toss and turn, and the harder you try, the harder it is to drift off. And today's digital age makes it even harder. You're not alone with this struggle. Poor sleep affects over 70% of Americans. Even the Centers for Disease Control label insufficient sleep a public health epidemic. To take back your sleep, Healthy Cell has created REM Sleep, the only sleep supplement made to support all four stages of human sleep with calming herbs, amino acids, and sleep hormone support. Delivered in a patent-pending, pill-free, ultra-absorption microgel formula that tastes great. Fall asleep, stay asleep, sleep deeply, and wake up refreshed with Healthy Cell's REM Sleep. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Welcome back, Bold Americans. We're sitting here with Chuck Creekmore having a conversation about hip-hop culture, wondering if it is still alive and well in this country. And I first contacted Chuck to talk to him about the rap pioneers. I wanted to find out if hip-hop culture and the rap pioneers were still carrying it along, teaching history for those that do not know it. And the reason I thought about this was, I'll drop a name in my class, and my students seem to never know some of the huge names in hip hop that brought people together, such as like KRS-One. They would be unaware that he started the Stop the Violence movement within the cities. People like Luke from Two Live Crew that fought the government single-handedly almost and tried to give free speech in music to maintain liberty, took that straight on. People like Chuck D, who called out fake media long before it was popular to call the media out on lying to people. The pioneers were always up front leading the way. And I look at somebody like Luke, who now is in his 60s. He has an Instagram channel, and there's so many things going on in the world. And it seems like in rap music, I just get the impression that these guys don't know what their pioneers went through, or they just don't have a respect for it. Should Luke, should all these other artists, and I know some are still active, but should Luke and others be doing more to teach for the history books? Should it be more to make sure that the young people understood the struggle that they had to go through for the hip hop culture? Because I feel like that there's not enough being done by
them. They're all there. I don't know Luke specifically, but they're all there. They're still talking. Ice-T is still talking. Body Count's still rocking. A lot of them are on social media. A lot of them are doing music. Public Enemy released an album maybe a year or so ago. I can't exactly remember. And it was good, you know. But, I mean, you can't expect a 60-year-old guy. I mean, Chuck D, Flavor Flav, Ice-T, these guys are over 60 years old, you know. And, you know, Nas is maybe a little bit of a better example. He's not so loud, but his music is still, he's still saying a lot in his music. You know, after a while you get old, man, these guys shouldered a burden that I couldn't imagine when they were young, young men. Even Luke, he's not the guy to, he's not the poster child for freedom of speech or censorship. He was thrown into that and he took that on when he may not even have been equipped to handle that type of load. So I give them a lot of respect because they were young people and they were thrust into circumstances they were not prepared to handle. Ice-T was dealing with the president mentioning his name. Sister Soulja, who's affiliated with Public Enemy, I mean, she was literally name-checked by Bill Clinton and was very prepared to talk back to Bill Clinton. And so I give all those pioneers, we have to remember that hip hop is only 50 years old. And the people that were speaking loud and proud and fighting against the system were not financially compensated in a way that matters to their now. So maybe it's not in their best interest to do that. You know, we already know how you can be squashed or cut off social media or whatever very easily. So I tip my hat to all those pioneers and all the, and even Luke. You know, Luke right now, what he used to do is it was banned then, and now it's in your timeline on Instagram without you even wanting it to be there. Sometimes, mostly.
Chuck, man, that's why you're the expert. I'm asking the questions. From a humility standpoint, you just completely humbled me because you're right. Like when Luke was dealing with this, when all of these guys and young women were dealing with this, they were in their 20s. When I was in my 20s, I was still finding my way, and they were finding a way to handle this all with grace and composure. And I'm not sure I could have done that. I think as an educator, I just want to make sure that the history books represent what Luke, Chuck D, Flavor Flav, all these different important voices, KRS-One, what they all contributed to making the world a better place, to helping out culture. I think that it's so important that that gets saved for people to hear. I mean, I realize that Luke at the age of 60 probably may not want to crack open a microphone. That may not be feasible. But how do we preserve the culture of hip hop for the next generation? How do we preserve the pioneers? How do they get a platform to be able to speak to young people? Should they be highlighted and revered on the news? Do we need to have a better understanding of the beginning of hip hop and how it came out of nothing? What do people need to know? How can we empower that?
It's different, man. I mean, I think that the pioneers are not afforded platforms to speak on, you know, I think, and I don't think this is just hip hop. This is just in general. I think that they use social media like everyone else. Now, if you're not following, you're not going to see it. But I don't expect to see Chuck D on MSNBC every day speaking about the issues, because even that company has metrics in which they follow certain people. And if you're not hitting those benchmarks, you're not getting on TV, you know? So it's a different game. I think that most of the pioneers do the best they can. I think that the corporations are, again, where the issue is. And it's not really to knock the corporations. They have a bottom line like everybody else. I just think that hip hop is a special thing in which it was so untamed almost. And it was just such a brand, you know, new experience. And I believe truly that the people that we respect, they all come out of the spirit of someone else. So the thing we don't often acknowledge is that the civil rights was like decimated, destroyed, and whatever you want to call it, by the government. And then the conditions in places like the South Bronx were so desolate and destitute that people were breakdancing, I should say, outside on mattresses and things like that, and creating and, you know, stealing power from outside light source, you know, electric sources, and creating this out of literally nothing. There was terrible conditions that created hip hop, you know, awful conditions that created this rich culture. And they didn't know what to do with it. You know, you're talking about Chuck D. Chuck D is a follower of Farrakhan, by his own words. KRS-One studied a whole bunch of people, but Kwame Ture, Stokely Carmichael, and it goes on and on. These are well-read people. These are folks that are very smart. Even if they didn't go to college, it was cool to be smart back then. I think now, and remember, I don't want to get too, you know, rambly here, but hip hop is a sign of the times. It is a mirror. It is a reflection of actually what's going on. And we have this discussion, and I don't want to talk about critical race theory or anything like that, because honestly, I don't even know really what that is, because to me, the truth is the truth. History is history. And I don't even debate with that. But when you start talking about the silence or the quietening of the pioneers, you know, you can really blame school systems, for example. Why wouldn't we study hip hop in the same way 20 years before or so we studied Martin Luther King and whatever other person we mentioned? Because Malcolm X wasn't mentioned in school when I was growing up. Hip hop mentioned Malcolm X. KRS-One introduced Malcolm X to a lot of us. You know what I mean? So now that hip hop's 50, why wouldn't we talk about the genius of Ice-T, the genius of Chuck D, the genius of KRS-One, the revolution of hip hop, the revolution that Luther Campbell was a part of? You know, that was history being made. And if the kids don't know about it, it's not necessarily those people's fault. It's the system's fault. And I would venture to say that right now, with hip hop being this profitable, it makes sense to actually celebrate it in ways such as the, you know, as just as the school systems. I mean, that's how I see it, you know. And there are movements usually on a collegiate level, but sometimes you'll walk into a school and you'll see Jay-Z on the wall. And I'm like, why? I mean, Jay is rich and stuff, but I mean, he's deserving, but there's so much more as well.
Chuck, if no one listens to any other part of this podcast, what you just said like 45 seconds ago about integrating this into the school system, the history class, I think when I started the conversation with you about the pioneers, that's exactly what I want. I want a way the hip hop culture is honored and respected, so that way those that don't know the past are not destined to repeat it in the future. That the pioneers did not do all of the work that they did for naught, that they can move things forward. And wow. I mean, if that section and only that section can get to some school districts and wake some history teachers up about just how important these voices are, then this podcast and our conversation today will have done its job. Like, I can't think of a better outcome than simply reflecting on this going, okay, you're right. It's not the pioneers' jobs. It's the schools. I agree with you 100%. I mean, here I am. I've always been this really like white nerdy kid. Now I'm just a white nerdy adult. But hip hop culture and hip hop community always accepted me without any questions. And that's another reason why I'm passionate about it. Like, from a race relations standpoint, hip hop culture has done so much to bring people together. And I want youth now to know that. I think it's our duty to make sure that youth understand that and respect it.
Yeah, they should know and they should respect it as much as, you know, they learn about every other thing. So I think they should learn and respect the pioneers. It's tough because, you know, we don't always revere hip hop as an art form or celebrate the hip hop pioneers in the same fashion we would celebrate Berry Gordy or, you know, whoever, Motown, you know, things like that. Or I don't know. I mean, well, hey, a lot of people don't celebrate Chuck Berry, you know, so it's tough. It's really hard. You know, I grew up on a lot of different music, just like you did. But growing up, I didn't know who Bad Brains was. I didn't know Death, the group Death. I didn't know Fishbone when I was a young person. I learned about them later, you know, but I didn't know about them when I was a teenager.
Right.
It took a long time. So I knew about Red Hot Chili Peppers though, you know, I knew about them. Mm-hmm. So I feel like it's a really big problem, but if a kid doesn't know that Death or Bad Brains or Fishbone existed, why would they give a damn about rock and roll? Like, why would they care about punk music? Who cares? Like, that's not me. You know what I mean? And just forget about Chuck Berry and, you know, I'm talking Living Color and groups like that who were rock and roll to the core. You know, why would you care about rock music? That's not what we do. So I think that a lot of this stuff, even hip hop, man, I think rapping, the rappity rap rapping is corny now to a lot of people because they look at it like, we don't do that. We do what Lil Durk is doing, you know what I mean? Or whatever.
Right.
But they don't understand where Common was. He's from Chicago. They know Kanye, of course, but
of course,
you know, Common, Twista.
Twista was when everybody had to go as fast as possible. And that paved the way for Eminem going fast and everybody else.
Him and Eminem went back and forth for a few days. It was actually crazy to witness those two kind of sparring just very like nicely. But it really was just Eminem posted something and then Twista responded. But, you know, those guys, I mean, yeah, man, but that's a skill. That's amazing.
It's definitely a skill that I don't have. So just back to the education side, you know, how do we get students to care about maybe asking for hip hop culture in their education? Because school boards are going to have to help implement this into the lesson plans and everything else. Is there a way we can get students to care about that?
I think youth care, actually. I believe youth care if you care. So if you care about what they're doing and you show interest genuinely, they will care about what you're doing as well. And I've seen this firsthand. My little cousin, he's not so little now, but he was a teenager, a young teen, when I first started to mentor him because I realized that hip hop was influencing him in a negative way, at least what he was listening to. And one day I let him listen to Big Pun at my brother's wedding. And I said, man, that ain't, you know, that what you listening to ain't, that ain't nothing. Listen to this. And ever since then, we have had a great relationship of sharing and debating and talking. And he actually thinks he's a Gen Xer. And I'm like, dude, you're not my age. Like, you can't be what I am. You can appreciate it, but you're not what, you know, you're not that. And so it's really fun, though, because it reminds me almost of me and my dad. You know, my dad loved James Brown, and he used to call James Brown the godfather of hip hop and soul. Yeah. But my dad also, I mean, yeah, hip hop and soul. But my dad also loved Run DMC. He didn't like Prince and Michael. You know, he liked James Brown. And James, obviously, there's a relationship between James Brown, Prince, and Michael. But, you know, I think with kids, you just have to talk to them. You can't finger wag them. You couldn't finger wag us. I mean, you couldn't finger wag me. If you look, I have a whole diss record, diss song to James Brown that I wrote back in the day. So you're not going to sit here and tell me what I need to do. But if you talk to me, yeah, we can be cool. So kids just need to understand that nothing they are doing is special. I mean, I interviewed Just Ice and he's like, I don't do rap beef, I shoot people, and was dead serious. He was not
damn.
So Chuck, where do I get a copy of this whole James Brown diss?
Yeah, never recorded. I may have the lyrics somewhere.
So, speaking of you as a writer, you have a nickname, Jigsaw. How'd you get the name Jigsaw?
Jigsaw was given to me by a friend of mine who felt I was hard to understand.
So basically it was just a friend saying, trying to put the pieces together.
Yeah, that was the main, that's the reason.
Awesome. So we're going to take a quick break, Chuck. When we get back, I want to talk about maybe how we can empower young people to take control of their own music careers and maybe have a little fun, maybe put together a top list of MCs or people who have influenced hip hop culture. Everybody, you're listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. We'll be right back.
How the spirit of American liberty and justice is woven into the soul of America Out Loud. Now, we invite you, friends, to invest some of your time with our magnificent family of experts, their minds and voices. It's all back at AmericaOutLoud.com. Liberty and justice for all.
It's summertime. Ready for your vacation to the beach, the lake, or the mountains? But what about your accommodations? Ever wonder what germs were left behind by the previous guests? Kathy G. from Tulsa says the Genesis Fogger gives her peace of mind and confidence when traveling. With Genesis, she knows that the air and surfaces in her vacation rental are free of bacteria and viruses left behind by the previous occupants. Visit genesisfogger.com/outloud to receive a 15% discount on the Genesis Fogger with promo code OUTLOUD. With Genesis, you'll be ready for what's next.
Oral hygiene hasn't changed in 50 years, but our diet and the way we eat has, creating an environment in your mouth for bacteria to wreak havoc on your teeth and gums. For better oral health, get Spry Dental Defense, an oral care line designed to combat acid-creating bacteria. The toothpaste, mouthwash, mints, and gum all contain xylitol, a natural ingredient shown to dramatically improve oral health. Spry can be found online and at all fine natural retailers.
Welcome back, Bold Americans. We're continuing our conversation with the one, the only Chuck Creekmore of allhiphop.com. If you listen to this last segment, that was just absolutely phenomenal. The concept of adding the pioneers of hip hop to the history books and making that mandatory in the classrooms is something, as an educator, I 100% support. And I would love to see that gain some legs. If you support that, reach out at Real Greg Bolden on Twitter or email greg@americaembolden.com. Let me know that there's support there. Chuck, I want to kind of pivot here during the interview to get a little bit more advice for people who want to enter into hip hop culture, want to have their music heard, want to figure out how does that happen? How do you get your music heard nowadays? Is there a rubric that needs to be followed? Is there rules? What's happening in getting signed? Do you still need a record label? I have no clue.
Well, there's really no rules, honestly. I'm always going to tell people to be the best you can be. You know, study the craft, work hard at it, be good at it. I think, in my opinion, these days you have to be able to satisfy several, at least three generations of hip hop. That's what I feel, because I think that young people do want to be respected by the older generations and the younger and their generations too. They may not, but I think I couldn't live with myself if Grandmaster Caz was like, dude, what are you doing? And I also, the same thing, I wouldn't want a young person to be like, man, you're really old and corny. Like, I wouldn't want either one. So it's a fine line to tread, but I would say really study your craft, know who you are, know what you want to be, what differentiates you from other people. I wouldn't be so quick to just put music out. I would try to create a strategy around what I want to do, because now it's forever. It's hard to delete stuff. People know kind of what you are, and you only really get it one time to make a first impression. I also highly recommend people study the business, know how to do your publishing and your splits, and know what the consequences are for sampling a song. At least know if you're going to, you know, go into it, like, you know, really going hard. You know, there's so many different ways to get in now. There's no one way.
Yeah, I guess like Chance the Rapper, he started without a record label. And when they finally offered him a deal, he basically said, go eat sand. I'm going to do this on my own, right? So is that a good option for people? Just try to stay independent?
I think independence is definitely the way to go now. I just worry, you know, there's a thing now, or Chance the Rapper fell off. He's, you know, it's risky, you know, because you have to be tight. You have to be on your A game in just about every aspect of your career if you're going to be successful. And you know, that means you can't party in BS. You can't, there's no Diddy or no figure over you that's being sort of like your parent or whatever guiding you through it. So Chance is doing well. I think he also comes from a place of privilege too, to have that ability to be independent. You know, some people don't have that ability to be independent. So I do encourage it, but when you're really hungry or broke, it may not be the right thing, you know. So I would say, though, if you can hold out as long as you can, I would definitely say hold out. But you got to have a team, man. You got to make people believe in you. You know, you literally have to. It's like running for an elected office or whatever. You have got to convince people that you're worth following, you're worth spending money on, you're worth seeing live, you're worth listening to. Like, you have to prove your value almost every step of the way. And that's exhausting. And I don't really, like, I just wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't recommend being a rapper right now. It's way too much to me. It's a lot of energy right now to get any traction, in my opinion.
I mean, isn't that the curse of being a content creator in 2022? You know, allhiphop.com. I'm sure that no one sees the hours upon hours of work that goes in just to create a small bit of entertainment or content creation for people. It is exhausting, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's crazy, man. If I was an artist now, I would say just do everything. Like, I actually think that if my younger self existed now, I'd be a dope artist, because I was painting back then. I was drawing. I was creating a lot of different things. And I just feel like that's what you have to be now. If you're just a rapper, you know, forget about it. You've literally got to be an entertainment center. You've got to be funny. You've got to be introspective. You have to be running three different businesses. social media is a business as far as I'm concerned at this point. So you've got to be running like several businesses and all kinds of things if you're going to be successful now. So I encourage people to go hard, but I also encourage them to be mindful of the, you know, the consequences of that. You know, there's a lot of people now who have had no plan B, and that's fine. You know, I believe in plan Bs and Cs and Ds, you know, but if you're not going to have a plan B, you better be really ready. You better have a kill shot. And if you don't, it's going to be hard. Listen, man, when you're in the game as long as I've been in the game, you see people come, you see people go, and you literally see you're literally following their whole life. And it's just something I wouldn't wish on anybody as far as the possibilities for failure are so great.
Wow. Chuck, earlier in the conversation at the beginning, you had said, you know, digging deep on Spotify, trying to find artists, people that are doing this grind, voices that I should be looking for. Who's on your playlist right now? Who's got your attention?
I like this guy, RJ Payne. RJ Payne is a Philadelphia rapper. He has time in New York too. He's a super lyrical guy. I like this kid, Coda the Friend. He's from Brooklyn, very soft spoken. He talks a lot about depression and being an introvert, his relationships, very thoughtful. I like Nick Grant. Nick Grant is another lyrical guy, but he's like a regular dude, kind of like almost like a new Nas without the Queens part. You know, he's from down south. Shay Noir is a female rapper from Buffalo. She's also kind of close related to the Griselda movement, which most people are already familiar with. Conway, Westside Gunn, and Benny the Butcher. There's a number. I mean, it goes on and on. I mean, if I open my Spotify, you know, I'll have all types of artists. I think the difference now, though, is it's harder for the artists to catch fire. You know, those guys or ladies that are really talented, it's hard for them to catch fire. It's hard for them to build movements. Those movements are no longer created on MTV or BET or even in the streets, for that matter. They're literally created in homes and on the internet and social media. And that's a different type of movement than Public Enemy and Flavor Flav and them running around the streets of New York and with Spike Lee or someone else propelling that. It's just a different time.
Well, since we're in a different time, you know, how does an artist go about getting seen, getting heard? What can we do as listeners in order to help somebody get a record contract? Are record contracts still a thing? You know, corporations, are they still offering that? Are they out of the equation? How's the record labels deal?
You know, companies are going to do what they do. It's hard. My company's we're an independent source of media right now. You know, independent hip hop is in a weird space too. So there was a time when you could literally say, this is next. And people would say, oh, wow, let me look at that. And it's just different now. So you have to, you know, you have to support with your dollars. You have to support with your streams. I mentioned Nick Grant in every interview, literally, you know, and that's just my way of helping him out. Mm-hmm. RJ Payne last year was All Hip Hop's Lyricist of the Year. So I could have named Drake or, I mean, you know, somebody as my lyricist, Nas. He was something, and Jadakiss too. But, you know, you could always go with the easy to, you know, the go-to people. But mm-hmm. I think it takes a little more courage to go with some people that are not as not as well-known, but just as talented. And so you have to support them with dollars, go to their shows, stream their music. Word of mouth still works. And that's pretty much all you can do, because, you know, and I know the conglomerates that are in radio, or on TV are not going to support those artists because they're no longer backed by the companies that now know what they want to do with the culture. So back in the day, Def Jam might have gotten distribution by Columbia, but Columbia didn't know what they were doing with the culture at that point. So they needed Russell Simmons, Rick Rubin, you know, whoever else to manage that. And that happened all the way through the 90s, well into the 90s, really. You know, and DMX is a notable distinguishing person to say he was able to break out after many years of rapping. And so the point is now corporations no longer really have a need for a Russell Simmons. And if they do, it's like the Russell Simmons, whoever that is right now, is very clear. I'm not shaking this thing up. I'm here to get my check.
Yeah. So like corporations at this point, they just don't want to risk taking a loss. You know, you've been running your own company now as co-CEO, co-founder. What is a risk that you've had to take, and has it paid off? Is there any regrets? You know, what's something where you had to go and take that risk that you were unsure what was going to happen?
I took a few risks. I think one risk that almost destroyed me was just really refusing to take financial backing. And we bankrolled all of our efforts out of our pocket, so to speak. And that almost drove all hip hop into the ground, basically. I mean, the people that attended all the events and things that we were doing, they enjoyed it, but we were super stressed. You know, that's kind of the price of greatness. You know, that's the price of pioneering even. You know, there was nothing there when we were doing these things. And we had seen that a lot of dot-coms went belly up with a lot of money, you know, and also they had no plan for that money either. So that, I would say that was it. For me, moving to New York, as crazy, as simple as that sounds, was a big deal at the time. I moved to New York with what I thought was a little bit of money. I thought it was a considerable amount of money. And when that first job I had went belly up within months, I then had to live off my savings, and that was, I ran through that quick. So, but the risk I took actually opened up the floodgates for me to be successful. So I moved from Delaware to New York for a risky job at a dot-com that went belly up within months, but I also met a whole company of incredible people that allowed me to create a network within months. And they recognized my talent and my skill. And then I was basically tapped into some of the best people I ever met. And to this day, most of those people are doing incredible things now. So, you know, you have to put yourself in the right position to win and to thrive and be successful. It's, to me, it's just not good enough to take risks without ensuring, or at least making sure you're leaning into being successful.
Chuck, just hearing your words, there is wisdom here that runs very deep that I think we should do another episode where I just cover your life. I just cover your experiences, your perseverance, what you got into, because you really are an inspirational man. A very successful, inspirational man that has been driven with great fortitude, and it's paid off for you in life. But it took a lot of sweat equity to get there. And I'm really wanting to have that conversation with you as well. I'm going to ask you a question as we start to wrap up the interview. I got two questions for you, and both might upset people by your answers. So I'm going to put you in an uncomfortable situation. I want to ask you, if you had to put a Mount Rushmore together, and so you can only put the top four hip-hop pioneers, right, or hip-hop influences on culture, and so you only get four spots, what four people are you putting on your Mount Rushmore?
Well, that's tough. But I'm okay. So I'm going to just leave. I'm just going to keep it with rappers. Is that all right?
Yeah, I'm personally fine with that. I'm good. Go ahead.
I'll go with. I'm going to start with Chuck D because Chuck D is always a stand-up person, man, leader. So I have to start there. Then I guess I'll go with KRS-One, number two, because he's still spitting right now better than most people half his age. He still can rap better than any. He might be the best pure rapper ever created, honestly. And then after that, I have to go with Jay-Z, because Jay-Z is not only a top tier GOAT MC, but he's also a top tier GOAT businessman. And if you have to think somewhat like Jay-Z, if you want to make it in this business. Business is the key word here. And lastly, let me think here. Trying to be diverse, maybe. Oh boy, this is tough. This last
I know it's tough because you feel like you're going to leave somebody out and hurt somebody's feelings, right?
Yeah.
That's why I asked the tough questions, Chuck.
You know what? I'm going to say MC Sha-Rock. And I say MC Sha-Rock because Sha-Rock is currently a personality she's on Sirius XM with Grandmaster Cash. So she has a radio show on LL Cool J's Rock the Bells. And she probably doesn't have a hit record you know of, but she is a part of hip hop culture and she's still doing it. And she's a female MC, the very first female MC. She was on TV in 79 when Blondie introduced her and the group Funky 4+1. All right, boom, got that. And Blondie introduced them. And I'll say Sha-Rock because I've seen her really come back to the culture that she helped birth. And, you know, those will be my four right there. I would also put Kool G Rap, who's like my favorite MC of all time, up there too. I'll put those three. Now, I'm going to give you an alternate four.
Okay.
An alternate four, and this is easy. Rakim, Kool G Rap, Big Daddy Kane, and, well, I'm going to say KRS-One a second time because that would
he's got to be on both sides.
Yeah, that would be my four.
I wasn't sure if you're going to add like Nas or somebody else onto there.
I could put Nas on there, but yeah, put Nas on there. But I say those four because Kane, G-Rap, Rakim, and KRS-One, the blueprints of just about everything that's going on right now.
Yeah, I would have KRS-One as my first person that I'm putting on any type of Mount Rushmore of hip hop. Definitely by far my favorite MC. And then if we're going back to, hey, let's put the history book together for students in the classroom, you got to put KRS-One directly in that history book as one of his own chapters, I believe. Don't you think we got to celebrate him?
I think that he should be celebrated just like we celebrate Nietzsche or all these other old people. He's definitely one of our great, great, great thinkers. And so in that respect, we don't give him enough energy. He's brilliant. He's controversial, but who isn't that's brilliant?
That's because all brilliant people are, you know?
Exactly.
And, you know, the brilliant people often make the biggest changes in the world. They have huge impacts.
And he was smart enough to put me on his last album.
I know. That was awesome. I had like a fanboy moment when all of a sudden I heard your name. I was like, hey, I just met that guy. That was so cool. All right, Chuck. So I'm going to give you one final crazy question here. All right. So let's just say when we die that We go up and we find out we got to come back as one individual. And it can't be yourself, but you got to come back and live your life as somebody who's already lived. I would pick Prince. Prince was just so amazingly talented and gifted, and he personified cool that I think that would be an awesome thing to come back as Prince. Who are you coming back as?
Wow, I would say Basquiat, but he died so young.
I mean, Prince died young too. I mean, I'm going to end up dying in my 50s.
Yes. I'm an art school dropout. That's what I call myself. So if I had to, oh man, that's a tough one, man. But maybe Michael Jackson. No, not Michael Jackson. But Stevie Wonder. Stevie Ooh, Wonder.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder, man. So Prince, Stevie Wonder, we'll come back. We'll make music for people if that happens. That'll be awesome. Chuck, this conversation has been so great. Share with people, what are your socials? How can people find you? How can people get in touch? How can they find your content?
You can reach me at Chuck Creekmer, C-R-E-E-K-M-U-R, at allhiphop.com, allhiphop.com. And we're on all social platforms except TikTok, because TikTok is a whole nother animal, but we'll get there. I got my daughter on that. But yeah, we're out there. I'm actually in a social media hiatus right now because I'm trying to do my rebrand thing and come back like a different person.
Well, Chuck, I cannot wait to see what type of person you come back as. I want to thank you so much for being my guest today and helping to educate me and my listeners on what's going on in the hip hop world. So thank you so much.
Yeah, no problem, man.
Awesome, Chuck. Look, everybody, if you enjoyed this episode, go support Chuck, allhiphop.com. Drop him a line or drop me a line on Twitter at RealGregBolden, or you can reach me, Greg, at AmericaInBolden.com. We're definitely going to check back in with him into the future. I would love to see a push for bringing hip-hop culture directly into the classroom as part of history. We're studying Martin Luther King. We're studying Malcolm X. We're studying all these big names. Why not talk about the pioneers that help bring people together through music, art, and just revolutionize an entire industry? I think it's an important conversation, and I appreciate what Chuck brought to it today. I hope that you all have a great day. Thank you so much. I know you had lots of options, things you can listen to, but you chose to tune in here today with us. And we are both thankful. On behalf of Chuck Creekmore and myself, you've been listening to America Emboldened with Greg Bolden on the America Out Loud Network. Be bold, America.